Hello, who's just joined?
Hi, it's Nick Axum here.
Hello, who has just joined the conference, please?
Andrew Scott from Lloyds Bank.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you
Hi.
For joining. It is just before 10 o'clock, so we'll just give a few more moments for any other participants to join, and then we'll start the presentation. Hi, Sam. We're just waiting for any other participants to join the meeting, so we'll start in about a minute. So it's just about 10 o'clock now, so we'll start in 1 minute.
Okay.
Hello, Orlando. I was just waiting for other participants. Just going to give it another 30 seconds or so, and then we'll begin the presentation.
Morning. Thank you very much. Lovely.
Okay, I think we'll start now. And welcome to the third bondholder investor presentation. I'm Steve Noonan, and I'm Frontier Power's Finance Director for the Provision and Management Services. I'm here today with two representatives of the equity investors in the project, Nick Axum, representing Dalmore Capital, and Matt Edwards, representing 3i Infrastructure PLC. Excellent, another joiner. I've just started, so I'll just start again. Thank you and welcome again to the third bondholder investor presentation. My name is Steve Noonan. I am Frontier Power's Finance Director for the Provision of Management Services. Should have waited.
Should we just give it another minute, Steve? Because otherwise you're going to keep doing this.
I will start again. So one more minute. I'll put you on mute for a moment. Right, I think, thank you for your patience. I think we'll commence now and see how far we get before anyone else joins.
I think just keep going, Steve, if any more join, I think.
Okay. Thanks. Well, thank you again and welcome to the third Bondholders Investor Presentation. My name is Steve Noonan. I'm Frontier Power's Finance Director, Provision of Management Services. I'm here today with two representatives of equity investors in the project, Nick Axum, representing Dalmore Capital, and Matt Edwards, representing 3i Infrastructure PLC, and they'll be available to take any questions at the end of the presentation. In addition, I have my colleague Bob Samwell, who is the OFTO Technical Director, and together we will guide you through this presentation. We also have Sam Baxter available, who's a finance manager working for Infrastructure Managers Limited, who will also be available for questions at the end of this presentation. So before we begin, I just draw your attention to the important notice and disclaimer on page 2 of the presentation, which has been published on the bondholders' website. So I'll need you to read that at your leisure. So turning now then to the presentation on page 4, I've covered off the attendees, but I'd like to bring your attention to some of the acronyms we've used in this presentation, including importantly SS6. SS6 is a gas that has excellent insulating properties and is used within the electrical switchgear and is widely used in the industry. However, it is also a greenhouse gas. There's a number of other acronyms used in the presentation which you might want to make reference to as necessary through the presentation, but I won't dwell on those in this voiceover. So turning now to page 5 of the presentation, just a reminder of the background to the project. The west of Duddon Sands offshore wind farm comprises 108 wind turbines with a total installed capacity of 389 megawatts and ensures clean renewable energy for more than 270,000 UK households. And the WAD's transmission role in that is to transmit the electricity produced by that wind farm to the onshore grid. The wind farm is located in the Irish Sea, about 15 kilometres off the Walney Island in Cumbria. And the transmission assets, which is what this project is about, comprises the offshore substation, the transmission cables to the onshore substation, and the onshore substation. WADS purchased those transmission assets on 25th of August 2015 and operates the transmission assets under a perpetual license granted to by the authority, and that license has a 20-year revenue entitlement period. WADS is a special purpose vehicle which is ultimately owned equally by 3i Infrastructure PLC and PPP Equity PIP LP, a fund managed by Dalmore Capital Limited. Frontier Power is the independent operator, asset manager and advisory business with a deep specialisation in the power sector, and we undertake the role of management service provider to WADS. Turning now to page 6, we've outlined briefly information relating to the equity investors in a project and also those of suppliers of services to the OFTO, namely Frontier Power Limited, who Bob and I represent, and Infrastructure Managers, or IML, that Sam Baxter represents. So 3i Infrastructure PLC and Dalmore Capital you probably know a great deal about, but in principle, 3i Infrastructure PLC has assets under management of about 3.4 billion as at the end of March 2018, and Dalmore has assets under management of over 4 billion as at the end of June. Infrastructure Managers provide financial administrative services to WADS and was formed in 2005 and is a leading specialist provider of management services to the PFI PPP market across a wide range of a wide-ranging client base. So that's the introduction and a bit brief description of the background and the investors and major sort of management service providers to the OFTO. I think now it's time to turn over to Bob. Bob is the OFTO's technical director and he was going to discuss the operational performance of the OFTO over the past year. However, before I do that, I want to give you a little information regarding Bob. Bob is a chartered electrical engineer and a fellow of the Institution of Electric Engineering and Technology and has extensive and deep knowledge of the electricity sector with over 40 years of experience in the industry and has held senior leadership positions during that period. So that's a bit of background on Bob. So I'm going to hand over to Bob now, who will deal with the operational performance highlights.
Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Samwell. I've got two slides on the operational performance highlights that I'd like to take you through. Then I should be handing back to Steve to talk about finance, and then I have another slide on the future outlook. So first of all, on page 7, the first of my two pages on operational performance highlights. The first item is about health, safety and environmental management. And again, we've had good HSE performance in relation to the assets owned by WADS. We've had no reportable accidents and we are continuing to manage and discharge our transferred obligations under the maritime licence. Ongoing, very important to us, pretty much the top item we discuss on every management meeting with our third parties and our stakeholders, as you would expect. Availability, other than the maintenance outages we took last August, and more about those in a minute, we've had no planned or unplanned outages in the period up to last night, the end of July. So the cumulative availability through to the end of July 2018 has been 99.7%. The base case model, financial model, was slightly less, so we've outperformed that. The availability from the 1st of July 17 up to last night was 99.49%. which will generate the normal incremental income in the form of performance credits. In terms of planned and unplanned maintenance, we have been doing all our planned operations and maintenance work to a comprehensive program according to the plan, and that has been completed successfully to date. The next planned outages that we have in our program are scheduled for April next year, 2019, for minor routine maintenance activities. However, it's likely that we will be taking some longer outages to deal with some SF6 gas leaks, which we found on 400 kV switchgear. This is the highest voltage equipment we have. It's actually where assets owned by WADS physically connect to National Grid substation. We have two high voltage switches there, and we have found that there are some SF6 gas leaks. The equipment is covered by a contract. The contract is with National Grid, and we're pursuing a warranty claim against National Grid under the provisions of the original contract. We've issued defect notices to National Grid, which they have accepted and have said that they are liable. And we're also managing this under the provisions of, we hope to be a successful exceptional event claim to Ofgem. This is where, if agreed with Ofgem, Ofgem would give us relief from any outage we would take in terms of the impact on availability. We've engaged a third-party expert to help us with this work. This is an organisation, a gentleman with, again, extensive industry expertise, and this is ongoing at the moment. There's a little bit more about this on my next page, so I will return to the work we have ongoing. You'll be aware that we had a protection maloperation in March 2017, which was the period just outside the last 12 months, which did in fact cause a loss of availability in March 17. The impact on that was a small reduction of 2.5% on the maximum possible availability in that particular month. We've produced now a technical report, and we're managing information and a technical report which has been written by the manufacturer of that relay, and that again is the subject of an exceptional event claim which is in the process of being made to Ofgem. We've continued to have good relationships with our stakeholders, including the regulator, National Grid, financial, and the O&M contractor, Ørsted. You'd be aware they renamed themselves during the last 12 months. There are a couple of proximity agreements. The Walney extension, we were close to some work that was carried out on Walney, and we had an agreement where we were safeguarded for any possible damage that was done during those activities by those third parties. That was overseen and managed for us with experts, including ARUP, who are the lender's technical advisors. That work has now physically been concluded, and we're in the final stages of formally writing and having confirmation that the work has been satisfactorily concluded. So there is no longer any period of risk while that work is being carried out. It was some distance from our cables. Nevertheless, we had an agreement in place to be included to make sure that any safeguards were taken. But that work is now over. Going to move on to the next page, page 8, talk about our O&M activities, operations and maintenance activities. There is other warranty work which is ongoing. The work that was concluded last August, where we did take the planned outages to repair some fiber optic cable earthing, that has been successfully concluded. That was concluded in August. There was some small minor oil leaks on one 400 kV transformer onshore and one 155 kV transformer offshore. Those have been remediated, and we replaced the suspect relay I've mentioned already. We have now, in the last few months, identified some new warranty work, and this is associated with cable support trays on the offshore platform. Good morning. This work is in progress, and we have again, agreement from Fabricom, who accepted liability, and that work is planned to be concluded before the end of the calendar year, depending on availability of their staff and access. We also have another small oil leak on the other 155 kV transformer offshore. This is a small leak. It's manageable, a few drips of oil, and it's something that we would intend to remediate when we take the longer 400 kV outages to repair the switchgear problem next year. We've also had a small SF6 leak on another item of switchgear associated with the static voltage compensation. And again, this is a relatively small leak, and we will coordinate that with the future 400 kV outage as well. Going back to the 400 kV switchgear outage, we've carried out, in collaboration with National Grid and the switchgear manufacturer, a comprehensive inspection program to determine how many leaks and the nature of the leaks that we have on the SF6 switchgear. This ongoing discussion with National Grid and Siemens is nearing a conclusion in terms of understanding the root cause of the problem, and we're in the process of agreeing exactly what the root cause is, the extent of repair work that's necessary, and then when we know that, we will be able to plan future outages to actually carry out the work. The work is again under the warranty or with contract with National Grid, although it's important that we stress that there will be a consequential impact, because it could potentially impact our availability if we were unsuccessful in claiming an exceptional event claim with Ofgem. So that is absolutely top of the list in terms of priority for us, is to make sure that we do get a successful exceptional event claim. We don't yet know the extent of the outage that we will require, and that is an ongoing discussion with National Grid. Currently, we have confirmation from National Grid that the nature of the leak and what we're doing is entirely within their regulations, their policies and procedures, which have been developed to comply with the fluorinated greenhouse gas regulations. So we're confident that at the moment we are complying with the appropriate legislation and National Grid policy, who themselves are actively helping us manage the situation. In terms of the maritime organisation and the marine licence, we think it's prudent to apply for a preemptive licence should we in fact have the need to do any work on our cables. If we were to have a cable failure, we would need a maritime licence. So we're in the process of applying for a preemptive licence that would short-circuit that, that process. Probably an unfortunate choice of words there, but we are close to having a preemptive licence in place should we need to carry out any emergency work. During the course of the last year, we had a requirement within the original contracts to conclude a provisional arrangement with the vendors of the project, 2WADS, where some work was carried out on the cables around a cable crossing associated with the Barrow wind farm. And on the basis of latest survey information, the latest survey being spring 18, there was a need to conclude an agreement with the vendors for a sum of money, or a provisional sum of money that had been set aside, that would then enable WADS to have that money in reserve should any future work be needed on the crossing. As a result of detailed conversations with the vendors, we were at that point unable to agree what the final sum should be. So that has gone to expert determination. An expert has been appointed, and we're expecting that we will conclude the matter within the next few months. Certainly good progress has been made, and we are, we've made on from both sides technical presentations and reports that the expert is currently reviewing. In terms of ongoing seabed mobility and survey work, we're up to date with all our surveys, and what we've been doing is combining all the survey information we have from the very beginning of the project into a single model that will allow us to see trends and identify areas where we have potential risk, which would then inform a program of work for which we have provision made in our budgets all the way through to the end of the life of the project for further work to protect cables from the offshore platform to the onshore substation. And that work is ongoing and is, again, according to plan and on progress, on target. So I think that's me. Steve, back to you for financial performance highlights.
Okay, thank you, Bob. So we're going to deal with the content on page 9 of the presentation. The senior debt structure hasn't changed. It's merely reflecting what is laid down within the prospectus and the bond documentation. So at the end of June 2018, the company's senior debt structure shows senior bonds outstanding $230,470K, RPI swaps in place for about 75% of revenue, and the PBCE letter of credit of 15% of the bond principal, which is undrawn. Key lending ratios, the debt service cover ratio projected historic and the debt life cover ratio comfortably in excess of the lockup ratios, as you can see from that table. We continue to invoice National Grid for the availability payments, and transmission revenue of £22,584,000, which includes performance credits of £664,000 for the financial year ending 31st of March 2019, is being invoiced as normal on 12 equal monthly instalments, and continues to be settled in accordance with industry standards. And those industry standards effectively are commodity-based, and settlement is within 14, 15 days of when the invoice is rendered. The performance credits of £644,000 reflect the availability of the transmission system of 99.23% for the performance period 1 January 2017 through to 31st December 2017. So the money follows the performance in relation to the calendar year, but the collection of the credits relating to that take place with effect from the following 1st of April and are collected through to the following 31st of March. Operating costs that have been incurred through to the end of June are in line with budget. We continue to make all payments to contractors and in accordance with payment terms. All the key financial deliverables have been met, including the filing of regulatory accounts for the year ending 31st of March 2018 with the authority, and you will see that they have been loaded onto the bondholders' website. There's been no event of default. Cumulative debt service for the period from financial close through the end of June 2018 was £48,269,000, and that's in line with the financial close and current operational model, and indeed all the relevant bond documentation. And as mentioned, the PBCE remains undrawn, and the letter of credit as at the end of June stands at £34,571K, being 15%, an amount equivalent to 15% of the bond principal outstanding as at the end of June. So in terms of financial performance, it's pretty plain vanilla through to the end of June. So again, now I will pass back to Bob to talk about the outlook and the key sort of objectives over the next 12 months.
Thanks, Steve. The key operational priorities, as you imagine, reflect what we've been through already. Of course, as I said before, health, safety, environment always comes top of the list, and that will be something we will continue to manage proactively with all our stakeholders, as will assurances that we do everything we can to continue the high availability of the assets in everything we do. So, for example, one of the things we've been doing, or we've done this year, is we've actually delayed planned small outage work for testing of equipment where we know we can now delay that work until we take our outages for the 400 kV at some stage to repair the SF6 leak. So where we can try and be proactive to maximise the availability, we will. We will continue to be very proactive in managing the 400 kV warranty investigation. As I've said before, we're making very good progress on that, and we have very good relationships with National Grid. We incidentally have some of their own equipment identical to ours with the same problem. So we are working together very closely as a team, and we've engaged a technical expert to assist us with that. We continue to manage any other warranty claims on the 400 and the other items I've mentioned. The other two very important things for us in terms of our availability are the exceptional event claims. The small one, which would be, which is to do with the maloperation of the relay, and the more recent one, the one to do with the 400 kV switchgear and the SF6 leaks. We are soon to conclude the discussions about the Barrow crossing, and as I said, the expert is currently considering the submissions made to him by the vendors and by ourselves. And we've also engaged to help us, ARUP, and a company called OWC. ARUP is the our vendor's technical expert. So again, we have got the most, we hope, the best set of technical arguments to support our claim to maximise the amount of funds that will be made available to us. We continue to apply good industry practice and maintain our good working relationships with Ørsted and other third parties that we are involved in managing our assets to their maximum performance. So I think that's the last point for me on the outlook on page 10. Moving now to page 11, we'd like to invite questions from people on the call. Please, if you like to ask a question, would you please say who you are and your name and the organisation you represent? So could I please open the floor now to any questions any of you may have?
Hello, it's Orlando Finzi at M&G Investments. Is the line open?
Yes.
Hi. Thanks very much for the presentation to everyone. It sounds as if, not trying to generalise, as if things are generally going fairly well, and I think within budget, if I'm not mistaken, which is great, and well done on that. I just wanted to check. It seems that the 400 kV outage and SF6 leak is kind of a key item on that. I'm just sort of curious. Obviously, National Grid is liable here, but is it actually an equipment manufacturer that's liable? Is there a sort of chain here? And what sort of quantum are we talking about in terms of the sort of repair cost, if you like? Is there some sort of ballpark? Are we talking hundreds of thousands or millions, or just some way of quantifying?
Yes.
That would be really helpful to start with. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. Are there any other questions to do with the 400 kV SF6 while we're there, and then I can attempt to answer them in one go?
Could I, if there aren't any others, could I just add one to that, if you want to do it all in one go? In terms of an FS6 leak, is there also an emission liability, if you like, to be sort of covered there? Or, you know, is that just a sort of recorded negative rather than a sort of financial penalty, just to be clear on that? Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. If I deal with the regulations, first of all, and then answer the specifics, there is a set of regulations called the Fluorinated Greenhouse Gas Regulations 2015, insofar as they talk about the management of any equipment that contains a fluorinated gas, and sulfur hexafluoride, SF6, is a fluorinated greenhouse gas. In terms of the impact on the electricity industry, there are no regulated specific emission figures that are provided, other than an obligation to repair, and then in quotes, without undue delay. So that those are the only regulations. So it's an expectation of what is meant by undue delay. National Grid have turned that undue delay and the electricity industry generally into a set of policies. And as far as National Grid are concerned, they have a policy which talks about a high leaking asset which leaks more than 5% of its volume and a volume of more than 5 kilograms in a 12-month period. Now, in our particular case, we've leaked 2.62% of our volume in the last 12 months. So we're within the 5%, but actually the volume that we've leaked is 33 kilograms of SF6, and we do have to keep a record of this. So we are assured by National Grid, and we have met their, if you like, we wouldn't be classified by them as a high leaking asset because we have not leaked more than 5%, although we have on above their 5 kilograms volume, but their specification for a high leaking asset is 5% and 5 kilograms. So we're within that. They've assured us that we're within, or we're being managed, we're managing the equipment according to their policies, and they're help making sure that we do that. So at the moment, there is no absolute limit that we have to have met. We just have to show that we're managing the problem without undue delay. And that is exactly what we've been doing. In terms of regulations, we're quite confident that we are satisfying the requirements of the gas regulations. In terms of how contractually this works, WADS Transmission has a novated contract from the vendors of the wind farm and the transmission assets. This contract is directly with National Grid. So the contract we have is directly with National Grid. Their subcontractor was actually a joint venture that National Grid set up for construction in the north west of England. And one of the members of that consortium, as well as National Grid, is Siemens, who is the manufacturer of the switchgear. So in terms of any work that's necessary on the switchgear itself, this is covered by the warranty that we had under the provisions of the original novated contract. So any work that is done on the switchgear itself has no financial impact directly of the work itself, other than any costs that we pick up in terms of supporting that work, making our O&M staff available, for example. But there is, yes, as you say, likely to be potentially a large impact when we take the outage work to do the repairs. Again, we're trying to minimise that, and we can take it in turns to do work on one switch and on the other. So we would lose about 45% of our capacity while work is being done on one switch. And then when we return that first switch to service and do the work on the other switch, the same would apply. So we'd only lose 45%. We have carried out some modelling work, and the way the availability works is that it's better for us to do the work in the summer period, which is from April through to the end of September, because the way the weighting factors work is that we get a greater penalty if we were to do the work in the winter period. So what we're trying to do with National Grid and Siemens is work out a program where we can maximise the amount of work we do in the smaller time as possible, and if possible, do that work in a period where the impact will be less.
Bob, can I just interrupt you there? Just say, I mean, bring back. I think the question primarily was what was the cost of the repair, and essentially the cost to WADS is relatively minimal. It is the amount of any support costs associated with monitoring the work carried out by National Grid Siemens under the warranty. So it's modest. So there may be a bit, but not a huge amount.
That's all really helpful detail, and I really appreciate that. Can I just kind of carry on, if I may, on that, in terms of your confidence of the regulator Ofgem agreeing that this is a, I think, exceptional event claim.
That's correct.
I think there's quite a checkered history there, shall we say, of Ofgem pushing back. I mean, how, from your perspective, how clear do you believe, it seems very clear, that your claim might be here to them, or is it too early to kind of comment on that?
Well, obviously, with some form of health warning, we have engaged an expert from a third-party organisation who has assisted other OFTOs in exceptional events. So we take his guidance very seriously, and I think he believes we have a strong case. We clearly have to present all the technical information to Ofgem, and we're not yet in a position to do that. But he has said, in his view, he thinks we have a strong case. We have found that there have been inadequacies when the switchgear was constructed, and we have had statements already from those involved that would give us confidence that we have a strong case.
I'll add to that, Bob. I think there's quite a bit of evidence in the marketplace that Ofgem, where it can be demonstrated that the issue in question related to a period prior to the acquisition by the OFTO, that it is a lot easier for Ofgem to get comfortable with granting an exceptional event. And in this circumstance, we believe there's a lot of evidence to point to the fact that the underlying root cause relates to a period prior to the acquisition of these assets by the OFTO. And as a consequence, we're confident, I think, that we've got a very good arguable case with Ofgem, and based on precedent, one might expect them to fall in line with our views of that.
That's really helpful. And if I could just, while we're on this whole topic, could I just maybe understand in terms of the... in terms of the SF6 leakage on the switchgear, is there a sort of baseline normal? Is there normal zero leakage? And I presume you only find out when you sort of top up or check a level somewhere. But what is what should one expect as a sort of normal, if you like, best practice?
There are international standards, so IEC. The IEC standard that is pertinent to our switchgear is an IEC standard. Actually, it's 62271, and the figure there is 0.5% per annum of the maximum acceptable leakage. So, you know, in the last 12 months, our leakage rate has been 2.62%, and the specified maximum acceptable in terms of design of switchgear normal operation. So this particular type of switchgear is 0.5%.
And could I just ask another question, maybe just to check in terms of the I'm just trying to find the right slide with the preemptive maritime license. Is there a sort of any significant cost to applying for that, or is that a de minimis cost to have that in place?
There's no specific charge. It's the administration of carrying out the application.
Great, thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any other questions, please? Okay, thank you. I think I'll hand back to you, Steve.
Well, I'd probably very little for me to say other than thank everybody for joining, and we'll make an audio recording of this, which will be available on the bondholders' website in due course. And I say thank you very much for your questions and participation. Thank you very much. And we'll close the conference there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers.